First MetroSec is providing this podcast as a general market commentary. Reference to any specific security, product, or entity do not constitute as an offer or a solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments or to participate in any particular trading strategy. The statements, comments, views, or opinions expressed by the hosts are subject to change without notice, and First MetroSec is under no obligation to update, amend, change, or correct any of the statements, comments, views, or opinions expressed. The statements, comments, views, and opinions expressed by the guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the view of First MetroSec. First MetroSec disclaims any liability arising from reliance on or reference to any information obtained in this podcast.
You are listening to First Metro Securities Philippine Stock Market Weekly Podcast, where we feature timely and relevant discussions on the Philippine stock market and the economy in the hope of providing you investing and trading guidance. Here's your host, Royce Aguilar, from the Research Department at First Metro Sec.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Philippine Stock Market Weekly. We have a special guest for today. We have here actually a fund. This is the first time we invited this certain fund to our podcast. But you know, before we introduce this equities portfolio manager, let me share first the performance of the PSEI year to date, right? So of course, we discussed this in the previous monthly webinars that we had, but it's good to have this refresh before we discuss the outlook of the fund management firm that we invited for today. So in terms of the performance of the PSEI year to date, we're down by nearly 10%, right? This recording is as of June 16. We're down by nearly 10%. If you want to talk about the specifics from the start of the year, since the start of January, we already had these concerns about Omicron. There's already fear of more aggressive monetary policy globally, as early as Feb. Of course, on the positive note, there on the same month of Feb, there was this removal of facility-based quarantine for fully vaccinated, right? RT-PCR tested travelers arriving in the country, that was removed in Feb. The problem also by March, SM surprisingly got removed from this FTSE index. Of course, that dragged the stock quite a bit after that. And then by April, there was already this surge in bond yields, right? So that spooked the equities market. And then, you know, since May, actually since the Ukraine-Russia war came in, there's already fear of inflation, not only inflation, concerns of stagflation. Again, that brought about fear of more aggressive rate hikes by central banks. So, of course, that offset the better data, better economic data, unemployment rate, manufacturing data. Even the first quarter GDP came in strong, but that was offset by this fear, okay? So now, let me introduce to you our special guest, right? We have here Mr. Carlos Navarro. He's the Equities Portfolio Manager from ATRAM, ATR Asset Management Group. Okay, so let's hear it from Carlos. Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Royce. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Carlos. So we have a lot of questions for you. I'm pretty sure our listeners here are looking forward to knowing your thoughts. Of course, for the past months, they've been hearing our views. Now it's time to let our listeners know what's the view of ATR Asset Management. So before we venture to your views, I would like to commend, Rick, if you take a look at the funds page of our website, the main FundSmart, specifically on the equity side, if you take a look at diba, si ATRAM Alpha Opportunity Fund, it's actually currently one of the outperformers. Diba? If you take a look at the one-year change, it's nearly flat as of June 15. As mentioned earlier, diba, the PSA is down by nearly 10%. So what led to this outperformance, Carlos? And do you have any expectations for this fund in the next 12 to 24 months?
Yeah, sure. Well, for the outperformance, I think what's important for people to know is that the main point of Alpha Opportunity Fund is to be able to identify which are the future index members. It's a small cap fund. We mainly invest in small caps. And it's all about finding which companies right now among the small cap that will have the highest chance of being included in the index. Because of course, as a company, a lot of companies really have the goal of becoming a future blue chip, becoming a future index member. So it's all about identifying those companies that can be included in the PSEI. So I think the bulk of the outperformance in 2021 can be attributed to Number one, we were able to identify ASEN, Wilcon, and Converge, which of course were added last year in the PSCI. So we were able to identify that at an early stage, even before they were being considered as inclusions in the PSCI. We were able to invest in it early on. So I think most of the outperformance can be attributed to that. But also on top of that, the pandemic beneficiary of all HC, we were also able to invest in it early on, and also GMA7, right, which was primary beneficiary of the election that happened previously in May. So I think those are the five stocks that we can mainly attribute the performance of the Alpha Opportunity Fund. Now, when it comes to the outlook for the fund itself, or the market in general, we expect really a lot of volatility. As you mentioned, Royce, I agree with you. There are a lot of headwinds right now. Inflation is mainly the biggest headwind that we have right now. For example, May inflation came in at 5.4%. We expect June inflation to be even worse than the May inflation. Probably inflation could come closer to 6% in the next couple of months. So it's going to be volatile. It's going to be choppy. Of course, with the Fed hiking interest rates, the interest rate differential between the Philippines and the US, that's also going to be a problem, which could lead to peso depreciation. And of course, that will affect foreign fund flows, because of course, this is FX risk for foreign funds. So that's definitely also a concern. So I think the environment will really be volatile for the next several months. But I think the elephant in the room will be inflation. And we'll see the market focus back to the reopening theme once inflation has peaked already. But so far, we haven't seen inflation to peak. So I think the market is going to be volatile for the next couple of months until we see what the BSP is going to do. Are they going to keep in lockstep with the Fed? And until inflation peaks. So until those two things happen, I think the market in general will be definitely very volatile.
Correct. Yeah. Actually, we agree. No? Actually, in our platform, recently, we just downgraded our PSI from 8.7 to 7.3.
7.3?
Yes, 7.3 by year end.
Big drop,
How about Atram? Any year end outlook? A year end for the PSI? Any?
Yeah, we are targeting 7.8 right now for the PSCI. We still think that there is still upside in the market. Of course, the most of the upside in the market will probably be back-ended, will probably be in the fourth quarter once inflation peaks already. So right now, of course, in the third quarter, while inflation hasn't peaked yet, we expect the market to be volatile, but we still expect to see some upside in the market in the fourth quarter. That's why we are targeting 7,800. Because earnings growth, we are expecting to see a 17% earnings growth for 2022. Now, that is also based on a 19.1 times PE. That's, in our estimates, around half a standard deviation below the mean. And that's how we arrived at our 7.8 target. And mainly because, as I mentioned earlier, that the reopening theme will really trump all of the other factors, all of the other headwinds that we see in the market. Of course, we're far off right now from the 7.8 target because inflation hasn't peaked yet. But definitely, once we see inflation subside, once the market focuses back on the reopening theme, then I think there's really some value to be found in this kind of market. So just to recap, we are targeting 7,800. That's based on 19.1 times PE, or half a standard deviation below the 10-year average PE, and also based on a 17% earnings growth.
All right. Thank you, Carl. So to be clear with everyone, that 7.8 by year end from ATR Asset Management Group. So you mentioned your inflation forecast for June to hover around 6%, right? If you may ask, do you have any inflation forecast for this year, for even GDP forecast? We know it's quite volatile. It's even hard to pinpoint when the Ukraine-Russia will end. But do you have any ballpark figure for at least for year end for GDP and inflation?
Sure. Let's start off with the GDP. We are targeting 9%. So that's pretty high. So the main reason why we target 9%, first of all, I think it's the earlier than expected return of mobility. Because if we recall back in March, we were downgraded in terms of quarantine restrictions to level one. Now that is earlier than expected because our expectations, and I think the consensus was probably around June or July when we will return to normal in terms of mobility. But the announcement back in March was something that was ahead of consensus. So definitely that played a part in our GDP forecast of 9%. And the second one will be the consumer items that are sensitive to mobility, such as transportation, restaurants, recreation. We think that that will drive GDP moving forward. And last but not least, we think that in terms of investments, that will also be beneficial to GDP because we have to replace the capacity that was lost. As the economy reopens, as demand comes back, we have to replace the capacity that was lost during the pandemic. And that will drive investments. And therefore, those are the three main assumptions why we think that GDP will reach 9%.
Right.
Now, on the inflation side, we are forecasting approximately 4.9% average inflation for 2022. Now, the 4.9%, obviously, that's above the 2 to 4%.
Great.
Our range of the BSP. So 4.9% is pretty high, although I don't think we're the highest. Some institutions probably are estimating above 5% inflation, but for us, it's 4.9%, still pretty high. Now, the first reason for this high inflation is really the inventory shock.
Right.
A lot of people, again, as mentioned earlier, earlier than expected return to mobility, bringing back consumer demand, and of course, on the investment side, replacing the capacity that was lost. This will cause an inventory shock. Companies buying back the rushing to fill in their inventory in preparation for this increased demand, which was earlier than expected. So that's the inventory shock. And to exacerbate that is they're going to replace this inventory with higher priced goods because of global inflation.
Correct.
So it's twofold, filling in the inventory and then replacing that inventory with even higher priced goods because of inflation, global inflation. So I think that's one reason why we think that inflation will be higher for 2022. Now, the second reason for that is, as we all know, in your podcast, you've probably discussed this several times, the Russia-Ukraine crisis, which caused a spike in global commodities. We think that we are feeling second round effects already of this spike in commodity prices. And that's the reason why we are seeing a 4.9% inflation for 2022, mainly because this spike in commodity prices has already caused second round effects. Also, the third reason why we think inflation will remain high is that on the demand side, the return of face-to-face classes and, you know, back from office, back to office setups, we think will keep inflation elevated for most of the year. So this is on the demand side.
Yes.
And also, we don't think that the Russia-Ukraine crisis will be over anytime soon.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully, of course, we want it to be over soon, but I don't think it will be over. I think it will be protracted. And because of that, we expect inflation to be elevated all throughout the year. Of course, it will subside sometime in the third quarter, but it will remain relatively elevated, I think, for the rest of 2022. So those are the three reasons why we think inflation will reach an average of 4.9% for 2022.
Thank you for that elaborate view, Carlos. This is a good question. Looking at the peak of the lockdown last March around April 2020 and observing the economic activities, there were definitely improvements, right, in how the economy is operating, but we recognize there are still risks such as inflation, more aggressive monetary policy. Now, how does your actively managed fund position in terms of exposure given this risk? Is the fund aggressive on economic reopening winners? Did you set some cash aside? Any strategies that you can share to our listeners?
Sure. We're still bullish, of course, on the reopening. But lately, actually pretty recently, we have raised our cash to around 12% of the portfolio. That's mainly because of the short-term bearish view that we have. So we raised this cash before June 7, which was the date that inflation was released. So we raised that cash before that because we do expect the market to go down, which it did. We're now at the 6.3 levels. So it was a good move for the fund to raise cash because the market has dropped significantly since then. Now, we are maintaining this cash. I think we have to maintain this for the next couple of months until we see inflation peak already. I keep on mentioning that because by the time that inflation peaks, I think that's the time that the market will bottom. And by the time that the market bottoms, that's the time we will redeploy around the 10 to 12% cash that we have right now. But until then, until we see inflation peak, we're going to retain this 12% cash that we have because we believe that it is more prudent for the fund to be on the conservative side, especially with the headwinds that we are seeing. So just to recap my answer to your question, in the short term, 12% cash, that's for the fund, but we will redeploy this. So this is only a tactical move, but we will redeploy this once we believe the market will bottom. And we believe the market will bottom probably around the 6,000 to the 6,200 levels. Once we reach that, then that's the time that we redeploy back into the market. And of course, I think that that will coincide with the peaking of inflation already. So that's the strategy. This is only a tactical move,
right,
but we will be redeploying this cash in preparation for a much stronger fourth quarter compared to the third quarter.
Yeah, actually, we have the same view, just for everyone's information, that we think the third quarter is going to be consolidating with the downward bias, but fourth quarter is something to watch out for. So thank you, Carlos, for that sharing of your tactical strategy. I'm pretty sure our listeners will appreciate that. So our next question is, based on our own research, the foreign ownership level of Philippine stocks is currently at 10-year lows at least. That's negative to standard deviation below mean. And we know that we need foreign investors to come back in to really support the recovery of the market. So what do you think are the catalysts for foreign flows to return? Specifically, when will foreign investors be back here rather than other countries or equities in particular?
I think we go back to the headwinds that I mentioned a while ago. I think inflation has to be in control. Inflation has to be controlled. BSP has to show that price stability, of course, is its number one priority. And once it continues with its interest rate hikes, which they said that they will do for July and a 90% chance in August, once they do that and inflation is under control, then I think that's the time where we probably see some foreign flows. Well, not necessarily them coming back, but at the very least, for them to stop selling. So that's one. Another thing is really for the peso to stabilize. Because for the longest time, we have been holding at around the 52.50 level. For the longest time, BSP has supported that level. But now recently, the last time I checked, I think it was yesterday, the peso reached 53.4. So this depreciation in the peso will not entice foreign funds because this will entail FX risk. And of course, you don't want FX risk. You already have equity risk. You don't want to add FX risk to that. So the peso has to stabilize also. So inflation, one, has to be under control. The peso has to stabilize. And I think if earnings come in better than expected, once earnings show that inflation, of course, inflation will affect the margins of the companies. But if the corporate earnings show that revenues are pretty resilient to inflation, that there is no demand destruction caused by inflation, then I think that's the third factor in which we can see foreign funds to stop selling. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm saying stop selling net, not necessarily to come back because there is still a lot of, not only locally, there are a lot of global concerns right now.
Correct.
Because after this interest rate hike by the Fed, the next problem right now is, will there be a hard landing? Will there be a recession because of this rapid increase in interest rates? So I think it will take some time for foreign flows to come back. But I think that once these local concerns are alleviated, then I think the foreign flows will at least be much better than what we're currently seeing right now.
All right. So thank you for that, Carlos. This is probably the favorite question of our listeners. What now are ATR Asset Management's top sector stock picks?
Yeah. For the sector, we think that it's the banks that will really outperform for 2022. Inflation is a problem, but of course, this will entail hiking interest rates by the BSP. And of course, an increase in interest rates will be beneficial for the banks because of their net interest margins. Their net interest margins will expand as interest rates go up. Now, in our sensitivity analysis, for every 25 dips rate hike by the BSP, that will translate to an 8 to 12 dips NIM improvement or net interest margin improvement. And this, in turn, will improve the earnings of the banks by approximately 1 to 2%. So this is one. That's why we like the banks. And the second reason is loan growth. I think the last data that I saw for sectoral loan growth, I think this was in May or April. I'm just not sure about the specific month, but the system loan growth was at 10.9%. Yeah. I think this is 13 straight months already of continued loan expansion. So that's another factor that we think is going for the banks. As the economy reopens, we see loan growth coming back. So we have the NIMs, we have the loan growth, and of course, a decrease in the provisions. That's the third factor that we're seeing. Of course, as the economy improves, there's less provisions needed. There's less need for the banks to set aside money, which means there will be less provisions. Less provisions would mean an increase in the bank's earnings. So right. I think those are the three main reasons why the banks are really the sector to be in for this year. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of pecking order, we like BPI. That's our top pick.
Okay.
And then the next is BDO. Now, for BPI, we think that the digital push will really work because we think that going digital is really the future. In the next 5 to 10 years, the bank that will be able to digitize their operations or what have you, I think will really feel most of the benefits compared to the banks that will stay as a typical brick and mortar bank. So I think it's the digital push of BPI and its partnership with GCash will future-proof the bank. So that's our top pick. And our second pick will be BDO. For BDO, it has the highest ROE among all the banks. And also it has the highest CASA as a percentage of their total deposits. So that's good, because that will lead to them being the biggest beneficiary of a rising interest rate environment because of their huge CASA base. So they all, on the loan side, they also have a lot of loans that will be repriced in the short term. So they will be the biggest beneficiary in a rising interest rate environment because they will benefit the most in terms of improvement in the net interest margins. So those are the reasons why we also like BDO. Now, for the rest, for SECB, Metrobank is trading at 0.7 price to book. Mm-hmm. SECB is trading at 0.5 price to book. Yeah. They will also benefit from a rising interest rate environment. So we like the banking sector as a whole, but our top picks are really BPI and BDO. Now, besides the banking sector, we also like other names. For example, our top conglomerate is AC. And besides AC, we also like an alpha name in Cebu, Cebu Air. That's also one of the alpha names that we like. Of course, the SEB will be more of a long-term play because of the depreciation of the peso, oil prices at all-time highs. You know, that's something that we don't see benefiting SEB in the short term. But we believe that once demand for travel comes, and it has been coming back, the demand for travel, I think we're going to see much better numbers in the long term for SEB. So just to recap, it's the banking sector. Mm-hmm. For our top conglomerate, it's AC. And for our alpha pick, it's also SEB.
Right. So thank you. Thank you for that, Carlos. So guys, take note. Okay. So this next question is interesting, even for me personally. So what sectoral trend are you on the lookout now? For example, renewable energy seems to be a long-term play. Any thoughts on that space? And besides that, second part, It's also worth taking note that REITs are now another option for investors to put money at. And we have 6 REITs, actually 7 REITs as of yesterday, with more to come. Do you think it's advisable to invest in REITs now, or should they match their expectations given the rising interest rates? So those are two-part questions. So go ahead.
Yeah. So for the first part, I think RE is really the future. Not only locally, but globally. ESG is here to stay. We've seen a lot of significant flows coming into ESG play. So RE will definitely be one of them. So I think the biggest catalyst for RE is the government push. The government push for RE. We have the renewable portfolio standards. The renewable portfolio standards are requiring that 35% of our electricity, our power, should be sourced from renewable energy. Yeah. 35% by 2030. So I think that will really push the RE space in the next 5 years, in the next 8 to 10 years, because of that renewable portfolio standards. And besides that government push, I think investors right now are just more, they give more importance to ESG right now. I think that's something that has received a lot of support, and therefore RE is going to play definitely an important role in that. Now, on your next question regarding REITs, now that's going to be tough for, I think it's going to be tough for REITs, because if you look at the region, the average spread between the dividend yield of REITs and their 10-year bonds are around 2%. And right now, the 10-year bond right now in the Philippines is hovering around 7%. So if we apply a 200 bip spread, so the REITs should be yielding around 9% if we want to equalize it with the average spread in the region. So we're far from that. I think the Philippines has a negative spread right now. I think that on average, the 7% government bond yield is higher than the average yield of the REITs.
Right.
So given that, I don't think it's trading at a good enough spread to entice investors. I mean, you just ask the simple question. You invest in a REIT, probably yielding 6 to 7%. You invest in a 10-year government bond, which is guaranteed, of course, by the government, also yielding 7%. Which asset class would you go to? So I think it's going to be tough for REITs. I think they should manage their expectations. Once interest rates go lower, I think that's the time to get back in the REIT space. But for now, given that bond yields are continuing to go up, actually, internal estimates, probably it will go above 7%, the 10-year government bond yield. So I think it's going to be tough for REITs in the near term, especially as interest rates rise.
Understood. Yeah. So that's a good analysis. And hopefully our investors or listeners can take that into consideration. So this is the last question. Trying to go back to the earlier part where we discussed your currency rate. So right now, the US dollar has strengthened in the past month. Strengthened is an understatement, right? Amid the signal of more aggressive interest rate hikes, right? And of course, the weakness in Philippines can even be attributed to the spike in imports and the like. So the question is, where do you see year-end, or do you have a 2022 average USD FX, a Philippine exchange rate?
Yeah. So the average dollar peso that we're seeing is 52.50, but the year-end target for the peso is 53.75. We're actually almost there. Yesterday, we were at 53.4. Year-end, we expect it to be at 53.75. I think there's even a risk that we could even go above 54 with the way things are going. Now, the reason for that, why we see continued depreciation in the peso, is that number one, GDP growth. We expect GDP growth to be good at 9%. We expect a lot more consumer spending, and we're going to have to fund that consumer spending. And we're going to consume more, so that will mean more imports. More imports mean more requirements for the US dollar, since we are an importing nation. And of course, that will lead to the peso depreciating, because we need to import and we need more US dollars to fund those imports, because we see an increase in demand as the economy reopens. So that's one. And the next reason why we see the peso depreciating is inflation. Basic economics state that high inflation will lead to a weaker currency. So that's the second part. And the third reason why we see a depreciating peso will be the interest rate differential between the Philippines and the US. So the US is hiking rates a lot faster than the Philippines. For the Philippines, we have hiked rates by 25 bips this year, probably two more in the next couple of months. But for the US, they have hiked their rates by a lot already. For example, last night, they hiked rates by 75 bips.
Yeah.
They did that in just one meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, that interest rate differential between the peso and the dollar will really hurt the peso because we're not keeping in lockstep with the Fed. We have to keep a certain spread between the interest rates in the Philippines and in the US. If we don't do that, and that's what I'm seeing right now, the BSP is not keeping in lockstep with the Fed. That's why the interest rate differential right now is not attractive for the peso. That's why that's the third reason. That's the reason why we think that the peso will continue to depreciate. So just to recap my answer, number one is GDP growth. We're going to need more imports, which means more dollar requirements. Mm-hmm. Number two would be inflation. High inflation would translate to a weaker currency. And the last reason will be the interest rate differential between mm-hmm. the US and the Philippines. So that's why we're targeting year-end 53 spot 75 with a chance of that being probably even above 54. There's upside risk to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Carlos, again, for an elaborate answer. So before we end this episode, would you like to say anything to those people who has First Metrosec account but invest in Atram, or those planning to invest in Atram funds? Any message for them?
Yeah, I think my message is simply for the investors to not to panic. I think that's the first thing that I want to say, because markets right now are not good. As you mentioned, markets year to date, it's down 10%. Now, of course, that would cause some investors to panic, but there's always an opportunity in every downturn. And so I just advise the investors to remain calm, to remain rational, to remain logical, and look at the fundamentals of the country, because we will get over this. A perfect example would be back in the pandemic, we reached the 4,000 levels, but now, right now, we're at the 6,400 levels already. So it's a significant increase from the bottom of the pandemic. And that's also what we see now. I think there's a lot of opportunity to be found in this kind of market, but you just have to time it. Just like what we're doing, we're bearish in the third quarter because inflation hasn't peaked yet, but we will redeploy our excess cash once we see things on the macro side improve already, which means that we are still bullish in the market long term. We're not here to invest in the market for the next 6 months. We should be here in the market to invest for the next couple or several years. I think that's where we will derive the most gain in the stock market. If we stay invested, we do not panic, and we choose our spots. So yeah, that's the advice I want to give to generally the investors.
Hey, thank you once again, Mr. Carlos Navarro, Equity Portfolios Manager of ATR Asset Management. So thank you, Carlos. And this has been Royce Aguilar, Equity Research Analyst of First Metro Securities. As always, with First Metro Securities, it's hashtag your future first. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to First Metro Securities Philippine Stock Market Weekly Podcast. Don't forget to follow us to get first dibs on our new episodes. For more up-to-date market news and info, exclusive content, and the opportunity to connect with your fellow Filipino investors and traders, join facebook.com/groups/FirstMetroSec and be part of the First MetroSec family.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia, the hosts of the program, or other programs of the network. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.